Hard Mary by Sophia Samatar, narrated by Jennifer O'Donnell.
Proverbs, chapter 8, verse 12. I, wisdom, dwell with prudence, and find out knowledge of witty inventions. We found her behind the barn. It was the eve of old Christmas, the night the animals speak with the tongues of men, and we knew very well that if we could manage to walk around the barn 7 times, each of us would see the man she was to marry. We met, shivering in front of the miller's barn, which was the most central to all of us, though of course some of us had to walk much farther than others. Kat was complaining because her 1 foot had gone into icy water on the way. Barb Miller kept shushing us, scared we'd wake the house. Mim was late.
She's not coming, said Barb. Let's go without her.
She'll come. The barn looked huge. You know how much bigger things seem at night? Behind it curled a misty, chilly sky. The stars all blurred together. From inside the barn, someone said,
"Turtle doves."
Esther gripped my arm and squealed,
"What was that?"
"Shut up. It's the horses."
"Is that what horses talk about?"
asked Esther, starting to cry.
"Pigeons," murmured the horses.
I felt like crying myself. My hair stood on end. But here was Mim coming across the field.
"Okay, okay," babbled Barb. "Let's stick together."
"Hello, girls," said Mim. She made a funny figure in the dark. Her long white nose stuck out from under her hood, glinting a bit in the starlight. Her hood looked over-large, stuffed with her crinkly hair. Still, I was glad to see her. For though she was the shortest of us by an inch, just smaller than Esther, and the ugliest by a mile, Mim was also the toughest. I could never forget how, as a child, she had taken a whole bite out of Joe Miller's arm.
"Mim,"
whimpered Esther.
"The horses are talking."
"Good," said Mim. "It's working then." We all linked arms and started around the barn. The ground was rocky and hard with old snow, and a freezing wind came over the empty fields, flapping our skirts about our legs. Inside the barn, the horses spoke of a she-goat and a ram. A cow groaned.
"Fowls came down upon the carcasses."
You could tell it was a cow, because while the horses had fuzzy, velvety voices, the cow spoke in a voice of blank despair. To distract ourselves from the animals, we whispered about the boys we might see, and whether they would come themselves or only their apparitions.
"I hope it's not ghosts," said Esther.
Mim said she expected we'd see a sort of layer peeled off the boys, something like a photograph. In the end, we didn't see any boys, because just on the 7th round, Mim stubbed her toe in the dark.
"Shit," she said, hopping.
We all had to stop. There was something lying on the ground in the shadow of the barn. Something large, with the faintest gleam of metal.
"What on earth?"
said Kat. We all crouched down.
"Is it a radio?"
asked Barb. "Let's take it into the light and see." The thing was cold and heavy. We dragged it out of the shadow of the barn into the starlight. There we saw it was a lady made of metal. It was about the size of a real lady, but only from the waist up. It didn't have any legs. Its eyes were closed. We stood around it, looking down.
"It's from the profane industries," said Mim.
My skin prickled all the way up to my throat. The profane industries, which lay between us and town, was a place of evil, where they manufactured all kinds of monstrosities. It was said they grew sheep in a field like vegetables. They sewed babies together with other animals to make slaves for the world of men.
When we were little, unkind people used to joke that Mim was one of these mismatched children. Her nickname had been Dog Baby. Now, staring down, I knew we were face to face with a profane instrument. Over the years, we'd often complained that they threw things around our farms. Mysterious white balloons had been found in the creek. And though they never admitted it, we knew P.I. was responsible when our cows suffered an outbreak of the stamps. This poor metal lady was one of their failed experiments. Her shoulders were stained with dark, rusty blotches, her head dinged in on one side. I knew we were going to save her. In the distance, a pair of dogs began to bark.
"Behold, a smoking furnace!"
Sitting at the kitchen table writing this, I feel again that enormous night, that time. A wave of weeping rolled from the barn.
"Enlo,"
cried the cows.
"A horror of great darkness."
We didn't listen. Mim and I picked up the metal lady, holding her awkwardly between us. A vole sneaked past, muttering something about a burning lamp. But it was too late. We'd already decided to name the lady Mary. And because she'd given Mim's toe such a nasty knock, so hard in fact that the toenail would soon turn blue and fall off, we called her Hard Mary. A cloud of black and white specks. It swirls, gathers, and divides. It becomes a white stripe on a midnight field. It becomes a man in a long white coat. He turns. He wears a special pair of glasses, one circle over his eye, the other flipped up against his forehead. His naked eye looks newly awakened, peeled, as if by pushing up the lens of his glasses, he has pushed away all intelligence, all design. A boyish smile. He is holding the circle of sparks he calls the crown. There's a hum, like fingertips on a table. A voice without words. She is a thinking creature. We kept Hard Mary down at our place, in the spring house. I was the only one who ever went in there, for the chill was bad for Mother's bones. There was a little back room with a skylight where we girls used to meet and gossip. I'd put a rag rug and an old rocking chair in there, and we set Mary up on that chair. Oh, she had a noble face. It was all angles, but her expression was gentle. When I went in to see her that first day, the light from the skylight gleamed on her bumpy hair. I'd brought water and baking soda and a scrubber to give her a bath. Mim was there already, muffled up in scarves. We scrubbed Hard Mary until she shone like one of King David's daughters, polished after the similitude of a palace. "Isn't she pretty?" gasped Barb, whirling in fresh as a peony after her run through the cold. Kat followed, rubbing her glasses on her skirt. Esther came last. Everyone wanted to touch Hard Mary. We held her upright on the chair so Mim could scrub her back. I could smell the honey and vinegar Esther used to treat her acne. I felt a hand cross mine, soft and a little pampered, probably Barb's. And as I shifted my foot because someone was stepping on my toe, Hard Mary spoke. Her lips didn't move, but she spoke in a voice thin as a wasp's.
"Ah," she said. "What is?"
You may believe we all jumped back. Esther sat down on the floor.
"Mercy,"
Kat exclaimed. Only Mim remained touching Hard Mary, holding her by the shoulder at arm's length. Mim's arm was trembling like a wire.
"What is?"
said Mary. Then louder.
"What is?"
Then she made a horrible, drawn-out gurgling sound.
"Oh, she's dying,"
Esther cried. That brought Kat to life. She had a reputation to protect, being from a family of bone setters.
Lay her down on the floor, she ordered. We laid her down, and Kat turned her over on her face. Hard Mary's back was covered with lines. There were tiny screws in the corners where the lines met. Mim, who always had tools, dug a screwdriver out of her pocket. She unscrewed Mary, and Kat looked at her innards. There was no blood, only lots of wires. Carefully, Kat and Mim wiggled something out of her back. It looked like some rolls of pennies stuck together.
I know what that is, said Mim, exultant.
Her heart? Breathed Esther.
My girl, that's a battery. 18 volts.
When she's happy, Mim's face gets a wolfish expression. She told us Mary's heart was a simple battery of the kind used to light the barns at night when the cows were calving.
So you can get her a new one? I asked.
I don't even have to, she said, tucking the heart inside her coat. I can juice this one up at a generator.
You could tell, I thought with jealous admiration, that there were no men at her house.
Wait, Barb said suddenly. Are we sure it's right?
We all looked at her.
I mean, she said, blushing, it's from the profane industries. Hard Mary. It could have something bad inside.
We could all have something bad inside, said Mim.
Let's pray for her, Esther suggested.
You all go ahead, said Mim.
So Mim took the heart and left, and the rest of us prayed for Mary, who looked like she could use it, flat on her face with wires hanging out. I thought of how she'd been made by crafty and wicked-hearted men who meet with darkness in the daytime and grope in the noonday as in the night. The windows of profane industries are black. You can't see in, and you can't even really get close to the place because of the fence.
Save her, O Lord, I prayed, from the sin in which she was conceived. Amen, murmured Esther, laying her hand on Mary's head.
Mary said nothing. She lay like an empty jug. But the next day, Mim brought her heart back, looking the same, but now filled to the brim with invisible fire. And when we sat Mary up on the rocking chair, clad in a dress Kat had brought her to cover her nakedness and a cap for her hair, she spoke again. Her voice didn't sound like a wasp's this time. It was fuller and even warm, like flesh and blood.
What is your desire?
Tears stung my eyes. It's a habit. I tend to cry when I tell the truth.
We want to be friends with you, I said.
Friends?
Said Mary. Mim took her hand. Mary. Your name is Mary. She said her name. We told her our names, and she repeated them after us. She was that quick. She knew all of us right away. In her dark blue dress, she was like a human lady, except that the cloth went flat where her leg should be. The cap covered up the place where her head was dented, and I felt somehow grateful for it. I felt she wanted to forget where she was from, to forget everything that had happened to her, and start over, here, with us. She was good at it, too. She learned faster than any baby. Her face in the glow of the skylight was silvery bright, like a winter cloud with the sun behind it. Though her eyes were closed, she never slept. Whenever I went to the spring house, she was sitting up, expectant. Her hands were cold, but clever, the palms and fingertips covered with fine mesh. We found she could hold a needle, and Kat taught her to sew and knit. I taught her to read. You only had to show her a page and she knew it. She'd read it back to you without looking. I couldn't go too fast for her. She got the whole Bible by heart in a couple of weeks.
What are you writing?
Asks Sam, which means stop doing it. He doesn't say it to be mean.
It's because he doesn't want me to get too tired. I'll be up soon, I tell him, covering the page with my hand. I don't do that to be mean either. I don't know why I do it. Barb taught Mary to sing. Hard Mary can sing anything, even deeply like a man. She has a beautiful bass voice. Esther taught her to take a person's hand, to pat your hair and say ever so softly, "There now, don't cry anymore." It was a magic time. In the evening, Sam would throw a handful of grain at my window, and I'd creep down the stairs and let him in. We'd sit at the table, scorching our fingers as we tried to warm them at the lamp, and whispering so as not to wake my folks upstairs. I remember the night he told me, a man must have a noble pursuit. And I knew that if he asked, I'd marry him. He spoke to me of the golden world that brings forth abundantly. He said there was no greater role for a man than to subdue and replenish the earth. While in the spring house, Mary sat alone in the rocking chair, her cap dusted with moonlight falling down through the skylight, motionless and self-contained, wearing her eternal smile, waiting for me to come to her again. There was a sound of trucks far away on the road, and a smell of burning from the fires of the ragged men who haunt the forest, and a low stink from the quarry where, even in midwinter, a layer of scum lies on top of the water. Sam caught my fingers playfully. Mary flamed in my heart, a secret. Instead of, "What is your desire?" I taught her to greet me. "Hi, Liddy." She could sing all the hymns, but we liked it best when she sang songs Barb got off her brother's radio. Sad songs about lying in jail on a pillow of cold concrete.
The black and white specks stand quivering. No one is there. The specks make the lines that are walls and tables and the ceiling that is home. Even when nobody comes, the world moves. There is a little glittering energy at the boundaries of things. This alone is entrancing. But when he returns, when the dots coalesce and spin, it's so beautiful. Almost too much. It's almost too much after so many hours alone. He has a box, and he is taking something out of it. That is eating. His shoulder hunches when he eats, and he shakes an object over the box, casting off a sprinkling of fine dust. He looks up and winks. Individually, the black and white specks mean nothing. But together, they make a feeling that is love.
She only uses what she needs. Hard Mary has no greed. She doesn't eat. Her insides are pure, as neat as a well-kept sewing basket. She doesn't soil herself. She doesn't sweat. She is mild as May. She has never owned a second cap and dress. It's true Mim brought her a second heart. I don't know from where. We used to keep it underneath the rocking chair. When her heart began to run down, Mim would switch it out and take the dry one off to be filled. Many men could use such a simple change of heart. We learned that Mary could tell us when her heart was running down, not by speaking, but by a red light that came on inside one cheek. The light would be pink at first, hardly noticeable. Then it would grow red and start to blink. When she got feverish like this, we'd do the operation. Everything clean and trim, not a drop of blood. Mim constructed a kind of legs for her so she could walk around. It started out as a hoop-like frame just to fill out her skirt so she didn't look so flat. Then later, Mim added 6 wheels, like the ones on a shopping cart. I suppose she might have stolen them. I don't know. Sometimes you find shopping carts abandoned along the road, rusting in the rain. It's not a sin to take things other people have thrown away. I don't think of Mim as a thief. I think of her as thrifty. It was marvelous what she did. Hard Mary can bend to sit down and get up. She can turn about the room. She's the same height as me. Sometimes, breathless with excitement, we'd take her out back behind the spring house so she could practice walking over the melting snow. From a distance, we knew she'd look just like an ordinary girl. "This is daylight, Mary," we said. "This is a tree." We got her to pet Mim's wretched old dog, Hokmut, who suffered this treatment in silence, his eyes half closed, trembling from nose to tail. When she got used to walking, she'd go far from us, a dignified lady over the pasture, but when we called her, she always came. I thought we'd saved her. I thought she was going to live with us forever. I thought they'd forgotten her down at the Profane Industries. After all, they'd thrown her away. Then one Sunday evening, a car drove right up to our house, and a man got out of it. We heard the engine turn off and the door slam shut. My little brother Christy ran to the door, and Father told him, "Slow down." I heard them from the kitchen where I was washing dishes with Mother. "Now, who can that be?" I asked her lightly, drying my hands on my apron. "Beggars, I expect," she said. "We do get a lot of beggars here in Jericho, foreigners from town asking for bread, barefoot kids wanting to stay a while, mothers stowing their babies in our barns for us to raise. The elders are always having meetings to figure out which ones to keep and which to send away. Somehow, though, I didn't think this was a beggar. My whole insides were buzzing like a hive. I ran to the front room, where Christy crouched at the window, hugging himself for joy. "It's a Mercedes," he hissed. I peered out. Father stood with his back to us, his hands propped on his hips. The evening was cold enough to see his breath. A long beam of reddish light came slanting across the dark, newly tilled fields. A foreign man was talking to Father. He was tall and elegant, with thinning white hair that the wind lifted. He held his hat in his hands. He had the clean, straight, foreign teeth and the soft, sleek, foreign body, and he was wearing a coat that went down to the ground. He smiled at Father and seemed to be talking in a nice, reasonable way. My insides, which had been so active, had gone still. It was like my marrow was solid lead. The low light struck the man's glasses, and I realized I couldn't tell where he was looking. I jerked away from the window and pressed my back against the wall. A door slammed. The car started up.
"Oh, boy," said Christy. "Look at her smoke."
Father came in, and I took his hat, blurting, "What did the man want?"
"Why, nothing," he said, surprised. "Only looking for something he lost."
"What is it? What did he lose?"
"Some foreign stuff," Father answered, frowning at Christy, who was dancing about, whispering, "Mercedes, Mercedes."
My knees were turning to water. "What foreign stuff?"
"Liddy,"
Mother called from the kitchen.
"How should I know?" Father said. "Go help your mother."
As I went out, he began wrestling Christy. He farted, which he could do whenever he liked. And while Christy giggled, he said,
"I believe I smell a car."
I went to the kitchen, moving as stiffly as Hard Mary herself. It was then I began my plan for her defense.
"He is the father, the king, the master of miracles. He makes me to wear the crown. His acolytes pass behind him, ready to do his will. They are Kyle, Jonathan, and Judy. They carry his instruments, plug needles into the wall. Judy brings him a cup of black. He takes it without looking at her, both circles over his eyes. He lights up the crown and gives me visions. I see the everlong and the bent. I perceive the knobs and globules. I am familiar with the scrim. I know collision. I am counting very fast.
She is as innocent as a little child.
All right, said Kat. We're here now. What's this about?
We had gathered in Mary's room. A lamp burned on top of the old chest I'd put there to hold her sewing things. Though it was March, we were well wrapped up against the vapors from the spring. Kat's face was pale and accusing. She had a bad tooth. I took a breath. It's time to tell the others about Mary.
Oh, no,
said Esther. Don't just say no. Listen and hear what I have to say. I told them about the foreign man. I was sure he'd be back, and nobody would keep him from taking Mary away from a bunch of girls. They have to know her like we do, I said. They have to see her as one of us. If people know about her, they'll protect her. Barb stared.
Are you cracked?
I opened my mouth, but nothing came out. Barb's cheeks were flaming.
Can you hear yourself?
She demanded, waving her arms.
Tell who about Mary? The bishop? This is it, she said, looking around at the others. We knew this day would come, and now it has.
She untied her cap, yanked the strings tighter, and tied it again. Only the previous week, her engagement had been published. She was going to be married to Mel Fisher on Sunday. Handsome Mel, who used to croon along with her brother's forbidden radio and had once accidentally burned down a woodshed with a cigarette.
Don't go, Barb, I said.
Which day? Asked Mim. We all looked down at her. Mim was the only one who was sitting down. She sat on the floor with her back against the wall. She never seemed to feel the cold. Hochmut lay with his head in her lap.
What? Said Barb.
We knew which day would come, asked Mim, in the same smiling voice.
Don't be stupid, snapped Barb. The day we gave Mary up. She's been nice for us, like a toy. But we're not kids. We're practically women.
If you say put away childish things, I warned, I will never speak to you again.
Why shouldn't I say it?
Barb shouted.
Quiet, said Kat. Why shouldn't I say it?
Barb repeated, more softly, but just as angrily. Her eyes shone, blue and teary.
Go ahead and tell them. They'll say it's a creature from profane industries with the devil inside. They'll melt her in the forge.
Esther was crying discreetly, standing by Mary and holding her hand. Mary's hand moved in response, gently squeezing Esther's fingers. Her face was still. I could see the coppery light of the lamp reflected in her cheek and the dark, shifting shapes that were me and the other girls. Then Mim said,
Liddy is right.
We all looked down at her again. Her awkward, too big head balanced on her skinny neck, her black cap practically bursting with hair, and her little white fingers, which always seemed sneaky, as if they were living their own secret life, scratching her dog's ears. Thanks, Mim, I said warmly. I took the paper I'd been working on out of my coat. This is what I'm going to present to the elders, I explained. You can add to it if you want. I cleared my throat and started. Number one, she is a thinking creature. I'd only gotten to number two when Mim snorted and I stopped. What?
It's a good idea, she said. But you're going about it all wrong. They're not going to care what she uses or how she thinks. They'll want to know what she can do. You have to talk about her like a thresher.
A what? Said Esther.
A thresher, Mim repeated. A threshing machine. Good morning, Esther. Thank you for waking up to join us this fine day.
She looked up at me with her hard black eyes.
Don't you see? Mary's a beautiful piece of machinery. Look how she knits. She only stops when you take the needles. You could set her up with some shocks of corn, and she'd husk them round the clock. We don't know how strong she is. She could probably lift a cow.
I lowered my hand with the paper. But she's a person. She's our friend.
Now, these fellows are greedy, Mim went on, as if I hadn't spoken. They'll want to keep her, but they'll be scared. You have to show them she's not going to lead to idleness or make anybody vain. She'll be owned by everybody, just like the thresher. They could send her around, like at hog killing time. Mary could kill a hog in 10 seconds flat. Making sausage? No problem. She'd stay at it for a week. The blood wouldn't hurt her as long as you oiled her afterward.
But if she's a machine, said Esther, she can't join the church. How Mim would have answered this, we never knew. Hokmut lifted his head, and a second later, we heard voices and heavy boots. The lamp, I gasped, but it was too late. The door opened, and Barb's brother Joe came in, followed by Mel Fisher and Greasy Kurtz. Sam came last.
Well now, said Joe. Nobody told us it was a party.
Mim scrambled up from the floor. Hokmut was growling.
Hello, dog baby,
Joe said, nodding at Mim.
Keep that old dog of yours steady. You know I kick.
It was true. We all remembered how, only a year before, Joe had given Hokmut a kick that nearly killed him.
Sit,
Mim told the dog, and Hokmut sat, quivering.
What in creation?
Said Mel, staring at Hard Mary. Joe turned his big, blonde head.
Why, it's a Dolly party,
he said.
We've been wondering what you girls were up to, and here you are playing with dolls.
He started toward Mary.
It's nothing, Joe, said Barb, trying to laugh and not looking at Mel at all, because she was too shy, just as I was not looking at Sam, who stood by the door against the wall. I could feel him not looking at me, too.
It is a doll, Barb simpered. An old doll we found one day in the woods, and we...
Don't touch her,
Esther said shrilly, getting between Hard Mary and Joe. That's done it, muttered Mim. Joe paused for a moment, staring at Esther. Then he looked at Greasy, and both of them burst out laughing. Joe shouldered Esther aside, so she nearly stumbled into the lamp. Cat shrank against the wall, looking faint, holding her sore jaw. Joe and Greasy leaned over Mary, with Mel behind them peering behind their shoulders. Mary said,
What is your desire?
Shit!
Hollered Joe.
A talking dolly!
Since they'd come in, I'd felt a whine like a mosquito at my ear. Now it grew louder, as if the bug was inside my head. The floor seemed to shift. I saw everybody in little broken pieces. Joe's thumb against Mary's face,
the black of Greasy's coat, shiny in the lamplight. And Sam by the wall, but craning forward now. Fascinated, a bit of his reddish hair sticking out beneath the back of his hat. Then Greasy's hand on Mary's skirt.
No! Cried Esther.
Joe was laughing.
Let's see if Dolly has all her parts, he said.
He pulled up her skirt so it showed the bottom of her folded frame, her little wheels at rest. Both he and Greasy were doubled up with laughter. He kept yanking up the skirt. Then Mim, beside him, shouted out suddenly in a strange, harsh voice.
Mary, Jephthah's daughter!
Her arms straight at her sides, her hands in fists.
Mary, Jephthah's daughter, Mary!
Mary's arm shot up and struck Joe Miller on the side of the head. He flew clear across the room and hit the wall. Her second blow caught Greasy Kurtz above the elbow, and he buckled, moaning. Kat said later she knew right away that Greasy's arm was broken. Mary stood. Her face was exactly the same, closed eyes and curving mouth. Mel tried to run, but Mim said,
"Hold him."
And Mary grasped his wrist with her steely hand. She moved so fast, like a copperhead striking. Sam turned back toward the door, but Mim was too quick for him. She met him with Hokmut, who snarled.
"Let's have a talk, Sam Esch," she said.
Now Sam looked at me, his eyes wide and dark. My lips felt frozen.
"Just
hang on," I whispered. "Everything's okay." Barb was sobbing.
"You've killed him. You've killed him."
She knelt beside Joe, who was all crumpled up. His hat had rolled under the rocking chair. The floor darkened beneath his head. When I saw that, my own head got heavy, and I sat down and rested my forehead on my knees. I could hear Mel shouting and Mim telling him to pipe down.
"Tell this thing to let go of me,"
he said. And Mim said she would if he'd behave himself.
"Tie his arms behind his back," she said to someone.
When my vision cleared, I saw it was Esther who was tying Sam up with a scarf. Though her face was blotchy with panic and she'd peed herself, Esther turned out to be Mim's right hand. Kat said in a shaky voice that Joe was in a bad way and she needed ice.
"In a minute," said Mim, seating herself on the chest.
She was so little, it suited her like a chair. Greasy lay at her feet, very still, as if he was scared to move. Mel, too, looked petrified, standing face to face with Mary, his wrists in her grip. Little tremors ran up and down his broad, strong back. Mim glanced up at him sideways from underneath her brows and smiled.
"My word," she observed. "He's shaking like Lebanon."
Looking at her, I recalled that she had a mother who suffered from seasonal weeps and a father who had shot himself in the face. I saw the others sizing her up, too, and watched them realize at last that she was a person to be reckoned with. Mim, of course, was perfectly aware of the change in their faces. Her own face glowed. She told them that Mary was a wonderful new machine. This machine was very useful, but, as the boys had discovered, it needed careful handling. You wouldn't stick your hand in the path of a hammer, would you?
"I've had enough of this," said Kat, stamping out. In a moment, she was back with a bucket of cold water from the spring. She took the lamp and set it on the floor close to Joe and began to clean him up, Barb hovering nearby, crying.
So it wasn't the end of the argument. We kept fighting, even after Sam had said he was sorry and we'd untied him so he could help with Greasy's arm, and after Esther had run out for a new lamp and Sam had taken my hand in the darkness. Kat fought with Mim, and so did I, for I was frightened. I was afraid we were going to lose Hard Mary. I told Mim, you couldn't tie people up, and she said plenty of people had been tied up for their own good, making reference to poor old Betty Blank, who was quite demented and often trailed behind her grandkids on a rope. I told her you couldn't strike people, and she said the boys had only been given a couple of knocks, and it was nothing worse than what they'd received from their own dads.
But you half killed us, said Sam.
Now, Sam, said Mim, be a man. You couldn't have gotten half killed by a pack of girls. Her teeth shone as she smiled, and her eyes were bright with excitement because of what had happened in the middle of our fight. This, what happened, makes the fight itself hazy to me now. Almost as if I'd been hit in the head like Joe Miller, who would be carried home on a ladder that night, the boys claiming he'd taken a fall while they were wrestling, and wake up in 2 days with no memory of Mary at all. I still have my memory, but it's frayed and full of holes, as if chewed by moths. I remember Barb said teaching Hard Mary to fight was a sin, and I added that, at the very least, it was a terrible risk, because how could Mim be sure Mary wouldn't haul off and hit somebody else? I remember Mim shot back, "Why do you think I picked a phrase no one ever says?" She had just said that, and she was frowning at Kat, who was wincing because of her tooth, and she started to say, "What kind of bone-setter are you?" But she got interrupted because Mel, with a sudden cry, threw himself into Hard Mary and knocked her over. She fell with a mighty crash, Mel on top of her. They hit the lamp, which toppled and broke. A whoosh of firelight started across the floor. At once, all of us who could move threw our coats and shawls on the fire and stamped it out. Smoke filled the darkness. Mel was groaning. He'd wrenched his wrist. I was on my hands and knees, lightheaded in the kerosene stench. Sam crept close to me and touched my fingers.
Look, he whispered.
Light fluttered before us in the gloom. A stream of barred light going up to the ceiling. I followed it with my eyes. It ended in a square that was half on the ceiling and half on the skylight. On the skylight, it was hard to see, but the part on the ceiling showed a man's head. He wore glasses. The head was alive. It turned back and forth.
A moving picture,
breathed Mel. The picture went black and then came back. That was Mim, bending over Mary, passing her hand through the beam of light.
It's from her eye,
Mim said hoarsely.
Her eye is open.
My throat tightened. I began to cry. Sam made me sit back and put his arms around me.
It's beautiful,
he murmured. For a moment, we were all quiet together. We were all one in the strange, flickering, ashen twilight. An immense silence seemed to come down from the ceiling or from the sky. The man in glasses smiled and raised a cup. Hold me tight, I told Sam in my head, because I felt that if he let go of me, I'd drift apart like smoke. Mary lay with her eye open, pouring light. We were all struck dumb, but only I was in tears, for only I recognized the man on the ceiling.